Okay, so we're starting the third perek. Hadran alacha korei l'mafreya, except for the parts that we didn't learn. Daf kaf aleph omud aleph. And for those following along at home, we're going to take a little break after Tisha B'Av, and we'll start again on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Steve. Hakorei et Megillah omed v'yoshev. I mean, we'll just say the dinim as they come up in the Mishnah. The Megillah reader can stand or can sit. Now Rashi says omed v'yoshev, im ratza omed, im ratza yoshev, which makes it sound like what? Afilu lechatchila. Right? Ah, have you ever seen the Megillah read sitting down?
Yes.
Really?
In private, not in a big
Like in a living room.
Yeah.
Why? Why did you go there for Megillah?
Because it was in America. They had a word.
Oh, in America. In America, everything's mutter. In America, maybe you don't even have to do the mitzvahs.
Wasn't that a wife who put it on the roof?
I once heard Rav Aaron Lichtenstein say that that idea that some people, you know, the Ramban, you know, not just America, all of
Chutz
La'aretz.
Ramban didn't talk about America.
That it's tziyunim, it's there just as a kind of signpost.
And we shouldn't forget them.
Rav Aaron said it can't possibly be that the Ramban believed that in the simple meaning. That mitzvot in Chutz La'aretz are not really binding, or they're not really mitzvot, or they're... And he said it very emphatically, as I remember.
It's a fairly mistaken understanding of why that was thought to be, because the actual quote is that it was tefillin and mitzvot.
Yeah.
And tefillin and mitzvot, all mitzvot. They're saying that it was actually Roshet Tevot for Taf Vav Mem.
Toru Mitzvot,
Trumot and Masrot.
Oh, Trumot and Masrot, yes.
And it's reinterpreted to be Tefillin and Mitzvot, and therefore, but the idea that you should keep Trumot and Masrot, even if it starts, so you remember how to do it when you get back.
I once did some work with a particular school in New Jersey, a very prestigious, well-off, wealthy school with a big building and all of the facilities and beautiful grounds and two soccer fields and tennis courts and baseball field and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they had a very nice, garden, you know, like a vegetable garden. And the kids, as part of, learning about the ecology and, well, that's it. They grew tomatoes and cucumbers and all those things. It was an elementary school. So I said to the head of Jewish studies, why don't you do, mock Eretz Yisrael? You know, like teaching about Trumot Masrot, do Ki'ilu Trumot Masrot. You know, there is no such din that we do Trumot Masrot, Midrabonon, or as a minog in Chutz La'aretz. But do it so they should know about Trumot Masrot. And I think if I remember, I said, you know, and next year it happened that next year was going to be Shemitah, and you can have like a mock Shemitah in this garden. They looked at me like I was out of my mind. They had no idea what I was talking about.
Sure.
Anyway.
So, there is importance to that, because looking in the opposite side, I have been Chutz La'aretz with Israelis who completely had no concept, Datim, who had no concept of Tiltul, Rishut HaRabim.
Sure. On Shabbos. Yeah, my kids have never spent...
You grow up with an Erev and you have no idea at all.
My kids have never spent a single... My oldest son is 20 years old. He's never spent a single Shabbos outside. Yeah. And by the way, it's not just in Eretz Israel. Today in America, there are a lot of Dati kids that grew up. There's hardly what's the biggest Orthodox community in America that doesn't have an Eruv?
New York City.
I mean, even in New York and a lot of places now. I mean, there are more local, even Washington Heights on the West Side. They're localized Eruv, but there's largest suburban.
I was living in San Francisco, which would get a lot of visitors, and now they have an Eruv.
Right.
But they have an Eruv then.
This thing that's in the news this week about Mawa.
Mawa, New Jersey,
which is it's on the New Jersey side, but it's not far from Muncie.
How is Mawa in the news?
Because Mawa, they put up an Eruv.
How
but they didn't get all of the proper permissions.
Right.
And the non-Jews, or the non-religious Jews, made a big stink because, I mean, the subtext is they don't want Orthodox Jews or Haredim moving into the neighborhood,
okay.
So, which is what happens when you put up an Eruv. So they, the law was on their side, and they forced them to take...
What? It didn't happen here.
It didn't happen here. And they forced them to take down the Eruv because they didn't have all of the permissions from the city. They had permissions from the... from the utilities, from the electric company to put in the poles, but they didn't have permission. It was in violation of some city ordinance about posting things on
signage,
on signage, whatever it is. So, I mean, the subtext is that it's an anti-Semitic or it's an anti-Orthodox kind of initiative. But Mahwah is a place, the fact that Mahwah is putting up, when you and I last lived in America, there were no Jews in Mahwah, let alone Orthodox Jews that knew about Eruv.
The funny thing about San Francisco was that because there were so many tourists who come, religious tourists even now, they come, and they, you know, compared to the small number of local people, it certainly wasn't, you know, enough to support an Arab. So we're constantly having to warn people, the Israelis and others, that, you know, you see them carrying, you know, they constantly know. And I remember one time I was in a shul, and one of the people saw, you know, some people they were carrying, and they started warning them, but it turned out they were Amish.
Insert the punchline here. We all know the joke. You can punch in. You can punch in the punchline of the joke is Shagetz. You know the joke. All right, so I'll have to tell you later. But we have to actually learn the mission now. So my question
on the mission is very simple. When he's talking about reading the Megillah, I'm assuming he's talking about reading it with the Brachot.
We're talking about fulfilling the reading the Megillah to fulfill
not
the
like
mitzvah.
He's
not
sitting down with
we're not talking
Megillah
about. We're talking about reading the Megillah to be up to the mitzvah.
And so I'm assuming also we're talking about somebody that has the abilities both to stand and to sit.
Yeah, in other words, we're not talking about somebody who's like in a wheelchair.
So, okay.
We're talking about that. We're talking about somebody who's reading the Megillah. The Mishnah does not specify. We're talking about the Balkorei. We're talking about the. We're talking about it. But Sibur, but Yochid, but whatever. Rashi says even lechatchil you could sit down. And despite your practice in the Golos, you never see this, certainly not in Shul. Because in fact, the Rambam disagrees with Rashi. And the Rambam says that the idea that you could sit down for the Megillah is only biyochid. But if you are the Shaliach Tzibur, and you're being motzi other people, so then, out of respect, out of Kovrat Tzibur, you have to stand up for to be motzi acherim
as an inyan of kavod for the tzibur.
Can you as an inyan of kavod tzibur? But
that's the general thing.
What?
That's the general thing. Whenever you
we're talking about the Megillah. We're talking about the Megillah.
Standing to be lichvod tzibur when you yotze.
Well, generally that's the case. We can think of exceptions to the rule, but generally the shaliach tzibur in davening, even though there are parts of davening you can sit for, and there are parts of davening you should sit for. Shma v'lechtocha vader. Technically, one can say Shma while standing up,
but one should not
if you're standing for Shma. You know, sometimes you're like in a minyan, in a crowded minyan, there's no seats, and you're on the airplane, whatever it is. There's sometimes you have to stand for the whole davening, right? So if a seat suddenly opens up, you should not sit down in the middle. In other words, if you're standing, you should remain standing. I think the Mishnah Berurah says from all of Birchos Kriya Shema, from Baruch Hu until the Amidah, it's either all standing or sitting, but you shouldn't change your posture in the middle because it looks like you're trying to do two different shitot instead of one. But it's true. Lechatchila one should sit for Kriya. Ideally, one should sit for Kriya Shema. For Ashrei before davening. You should sit because that's part of Kovid Rosh. That's part of Chassidim HaRishonim HaYushom Sha'achas Lefnei HaTfilah. It's part of the posture of kind of getting ready for davening. And even for Maariv, by the way, I think the Mishnah Berurah says, even for Maariv, you run it for Maariv. It's not right, but we all do. I mean, on Tuesday nights, we're lucky because we're here an hour before. We're showing Sha'achas Lefnei HaTfilah. Even though you're not supposed to go straight from learning into davening, because you're all thinking about the great Chidushim I said, it'll interfere with your Kavana. But even when you come in for Maariv, you should come to shul a minute early and sit for 30 seconds and catch your breath before Baruch Hu.
So Tom Coughlin was right.
Well,
Tom Coughlin was right.
Tom?
He was a coach for the New York Giants. He said, if you're not 5 minutes early, then you're late.
Oh. Right, so something like that. I mean, that's true certainly for Shacharis. People don't understand this. If Shachar starts to say, particularly here, I don't know how this minhag started. It's not just our shul. This minhag that davening starts at 7:40, which means Rabbi Shmuel starts at 7:40. If you get here at 7:40, if you're here at 7:40, you're late, because until you put on your tefillin and you say Birchas HaTor and you say Birchas HaShachar, forget about Karbonos that everybody skips. Right? You've missed half of a Psukat Zimra. Right? So if you're on, literally, if you're on time, and it's really davening starts at 7:40 minus however minutes it's going to take you to properly put on your tefillin and say brachos and say karbonos and say everything else. It's not, in America, it wasn't like that. Remember, in America, davening started and they said brachos, they said brachos out loud, and they said, right?
That might be one of the things about saying having to say Kaddish.
Yeah, when you have to say Kaddish, you make it there early. A point to get there.
If it wasn't for Kaddish, you start at Yishtabach.
What?
If it wasn't for Kaddish, you start at Yishtabach.
There was a minion I sometimes went to.
Shows that announce.
There was a minion a Shabbos minion where it was like very quick davening. They told you that Nishmas was at whatever time it was. You wanted to say long psukim in Zimmer, that was on your cheshbon, right? It's not right, but certainly to say, it's certainly like people that had say Kaddish would avoid that.
Once on Yeshivas, they don't say Psukei Dizim out loud with Kalav anyway.
Okay, but...
Yeshivas, they say that it starts at this time, and Baruch is like 7 minutes later.
It depends on the Yeshiva.
More than 7-8 minutes.
Depends on the Yeshiva. But, so, anyway, how do we get onto that?
Could I ask a question? If we have to stand up as a general rule when you...
So Shliach Tzibur, generally speaking, the Shliach Tzibur, even though there's parts of davening that you can sit for, the Shliach Tzibur stands for the whole thing. There are exceptions to this. Generally speaking, when you're motzi someone else...
Anyway,
it depends. In other words, for
even for Kiddush.
For Kiddush,
half and half.
There's different minhagim, but...
I saw the minhag that in Shivas, they would sit down, everybody would sit kapala, including the person making kapala.
No, so if somebody's being motzi you, and it's your minhag is to stand for Kiddush, let's say, but you're a guest in someone else's home, and they have a different minhag, they sit down for Kiddush, you should adopt whatever posture the motzi has. In other words, if you normally stand for Kiddush during the day, and the Balabais who's making Kiddush for you sits, you should sit. Same thing for Havdalah. Different minhagim about Havdalah, to stand or to sit. There's that story Rabbi Riskin often tells. Rabbi Riskin was apparently the Gabbai in the Reuben Shul in YU. And the Rav almost never stayed in YU for Shabbos. But on one occasion, for some reason, he was in YU for Shabbos. And that week he had given a shiur where he, I think I'm going to say this right, where he explained why you should sit for Havdalah. And he also mentioned this idea that if somebody's being motzi you, you should do whatever he's doing, stand or sit. So the Rav was in YU for Havdalah, they asked him, the Rav was in YU for Shabbos, they asked him to make Havdalah. So Rabbi Riskin, who had just heard this shiur by coincidence about Havdalah, told everybody, the Rav's going to make Havdalah, you should all sit down. Because after all, the Rav had explained that you should sit down for Havdalah. And he'd also explained that everybody should do whatever the Motzi is doing. So he told everyone to sit down, so everybody sat down. The Rav said, Havdalah's standing up. So he said to him, you said you just gave this shiur about sitting down for Havdalah. So the Rav said, Enoch Enami. What can I do? My father stood for Havdalah, my grandfather stood for Havdalah, right? Because he was talking in like Lumdus, right? That like, you know, there's a svara of why you should do this. But that doesn't necessarily, this is connected to what we were talking about in the car this morning. Right?
My father sits for Havdalah, but in America, when I grew up, everybody I knew...
And most people stand. Most
stand.
People stand.
My father sits for Havdalah.
Yeah, I also sit for Havdalah.
I never asked him why, but I know he sits for Havdalah.
I also sit for Havdalah. But anyway, so kore et megillah omed v'yoshev. You can stand, you can sit. So the Rashi says l'chatchila you can sit down, and the Rambam says no. That's only in your case when it's like, you know, in somebody's living, one guy in a living room maybe reading for a couple other people. But Tzibur, when you're being motzi to the rabbim, you have to stand up for kavod ha-tzibur, which implies that you have to stand up lechatchila, but b'di'evet, if you sat down, you'd be yotzei, right? Kara echad, kara ushnayim, yatsu. One person reads it, two people read it, you're yotzei. What are we talking about? We're not talking about like what we do sometimes where you break it up. One person reads from Perek Aleph to Perek Hay, and another person reads from Perek Vav to Perek Yud. No, we're talking about people reading at the same time. Karu Shnayim, Rashi says, Yachad. Two people read it in stereo, in harmony.
Sounds nice.
Yatsu. Anybody ever see that? No.
No.
Velo Amrinan, Ein Shnei Kolot Nishma'im Ke'echad. The Gemara has an idea elsewhere of Trei Kale Lo Mishtame. That if two people are speaking at the same time in harmony, so you can't, generally speaking, be yotzei a mitzvah of speech through that, because
you can't read it wrong.
You're not hearing a voice. In other words, if I make, what you and I, we're having dinner together Friday night. Who has to make kiddush? We both have to make kiddush. But we have this patent called Shomea Ka'one. Instead of both of us making Kiddush, you can say Kiddush and I can listen to you and I say Amen and it's as if I said Kiddush. But in order to do that, I have to listen to you. But if I'm listening to two people or 10 people or 100 people, so Trei Kale Lo Mishtame. I can't hear, even though obviously I'm hearing, but I can't discern your voice, which I have to kind of latch onto in order to be Yotze. So generally speaking, Trei Kale Lo Mishtame. But apparently Megillah is an exception to that rule.
The Gemara mentions that in Shofar also, no?
What?
The Gemara talks about it in Shofar also.
The Gemara talks about this in a variety of places, yeah. Trei Kale Lo Mishtame is also an idea that's used by the poskim Lakula in the issue of Kol Isha, in the variety of kulas that are marshaled for Kol Isha. One is if you have a bunch of women singing together, a bunch of women and men singing together, so that mitigates the circumstances. And if this is something that's relied on in schools and other things where they have, you know, boys and girls singing together, but it, not everyone agrees with this. But you see that the idea exists, both the Chumra and the Kula.
How come this doesn't apply to Kaddish?
Kaddish, you're not being Yotze something. Right? In other words,
I'm being Yotze saying Kaddish.
No, you're reciting Kaddish.
You don't have to hear it.
But it's not an issue of you're saying Kaddish for me, the way that you say Kiddush for me.
Well, who
said it? If I hear a bracha, I have to say Amen.
But whose bracha are you hearing?
Whoever I'm hearing, I'm answering Amen Yehesh Mirabba. But Enechinami, by the way, you're aware that this, well, the way we do it, that all of the Avelim say Kaddish together, is a kind of newfangled thing. By newfangled, I mean, you know, and only in Judaism can you say something that's been around for 400 years is newfangled.
Is that old?
Only one person said it for everybody. No, different.
It used to be that one person would say Kaddish.
Right.
Right? And we would parcel it out. But at a certain point, it became that everybody wanted to say Kaddish. The idea that the Avelim have to say all say Kaddish, and they have to say every Kaddish, and that's how it became. This is the Kaddish Yotam became the way that we do it. There are periods in the shul, in our shul, where there are more Avelim, Rachmanu Litzlan, and there are fewer Avelim. When we all first moved in, there were no Avelim, right? Because we were all young, which meant that our parents were also young, generally speaking, and you could go months and months at a time where nobody was saying Kaddish. Now that never happens. Practically never a minyan of somebody saying Kaddish, because we got older and our parents, Rachmanu Litzlan, got older also. Thank God my parents are both alive and healthy. But you were not put on this when you were saying Kaddish. I see Zaviasa now. Is it that in the Beis Medrash it's less relevant because it's a small room? But in the main shul where the acoustics aren't great and it's a big spread out, that the Avelim should gather up behind the Bima so that they can say Kaddish together at the same ketziv.
When I said Kaddish, so I would go in the afternoon to the shul of the kibbutz, and no one else was saying Kaddish, but apparently the kibbutz has a minhag. If you're going to say Kaddish and you're not the chazan, you have to go stand next to the chazan.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm the only person, this is so that everybody would sing together on the same page or whatever.
Right.
But I'm the only person saying Kaddish. They still maybe go all the way up from the back to school, all the way up to the front.
Yeah, but that's a good mini because you don't know. Maybe there was another guy there that time.
Right.
And by the way, when there's no mourner present, somebody should say that Kaddish. Right? In other words, the chazan should say the Kaddish, or somebody who's formerly, somebody
which,
should say...
Which Kaddish?
Generally speaking, all of the Kaddishim should be said, whenever it says Kaddish, but certainly the Kaddish after Aleinu, which is like the official ending Kaddish. We are not careful to do that, but we should be. And but part of that is because of the voodoo. The people are afraid to say Kaddish unless there's...
I don't remember if Rabbi Lewinsky does it, but Rabbi before Rabbi Lewinsky, Rabbi Chichina, used to say it every single day whether they were Avedim or not.
Yeah, well, sometimes the rabbi in a community like this often like saying Kaddish for somebody who...
Right, so I asked him about that once, and he said, even if I'm not saying Kaddish on behalf of somebody because somebody asked me to...
The Kaddish should be said.
Because it could be that someone's showing up to say Kaddish and they don't know what to do.
Right, no, and also because that Kaddish should be said. That Kaddish should be said. Mark is usually, if nobody says Kaddish, Mark says Kaddish. Both because he's not afraid of the voodoo and also because both of his parents have passed on. But let's get through this Mishnah. Kar Echad, Kar Shnayim. So what he told you is this idea of Trey Collins. So the Mishnah has this idea that none of us have ever encountered, that in principle you could have...
Why?
You could have two people reading the Megillah in harmony.
About the Kotel. Not intentionally, you could hear people.
You're stuck between various minyan. Yeah. I mean, if they were both saying it like at the same, you're two separate minyanim and they're both davening at the same, you know, the Kotel, you can, we talked about minyanim, that shortcut by starting from Baruch. Then at the Kotel, you can really, just like the... Like
jump from one to the other.
Well, like you have the din of a Kapandaria, that you can't use a shul as a shortcut. Right, like, you know, if you have to get, you know, like on Harabayat, this was the din, but it's also true for Beit Knesset, that if you have to get from one place to another, like leaving the shul, you shouldn't use the shul as a shortcut, right? So you shouldn't use the shul as a shortcut to, right? In other words, you'll come to a minyan late so that you can be spared, you know, the lengthy Baruch Sha'amar. And then after Kedusha, for Chazar Sashatz of Shachris, you'll cut out early.
Why at the Kedusha? When you finish Monasra, you don't wait for, because they're going to wait another 5 minutes till they finish. And then you go to
So you daven fast, so you see another place they already studied Chazar Sashatz, you can be spared waiting for the rabbi.
I've done.
And then you go, you jump to Kriyas HaTorah, and then you mail everybody, skips the Haftorah, you go get Kiddush, and you, right? So you can surf your way through a minyan in 15 minutes on Shabbos.
So what's told when you go from Kiddush to Kiddush to Kiddush, that's not really allowed?
I mean, Kiddush, you can have as many Kiddushes as you want, as long as you didn't skip the davening. Makom shenahagu levarich, yevarich. Ooh, wow, it's a big Kiddush. That saying, the bracha, is just a minuk? So which bracha are we talking about? Oh, why do you say that?
Because the bracha you say in the beginning is to be yotze the mitzvah of Kriyat Megillah, which is a mitzvah of the...
Mitzvah what? You tell me, is Kriyat Megillah a D'oraisa or D'rabbanan?
No, it's D'rabbanan.
It's obviously D'rabbanan.
But it's one of the major mitzvot of Purim. It's Kriyat Megillah. It's like one of the three major mitzvot of Purim. It's Megillah. Otherwise, we wouldn't have...
You might say that it's the main mitzvah of the Purim. Right. So why you so you want to say it's pshita that the brachot lefaneha asher kitchen of the mitzvahs of etzivanu Hamikra Megillah and Shasanisim Lavotenu and Shechianu, that's obvious. We're talking about what? This bracha at the end, right? This, how many, think of other examples that have a parallel thing where you say you do the mitzvah and then you have this bracha at the end?
Kriyat
HaTorah. What? Kriyat HaTorah. Kriyat HaTorah, yafeh. So presumably, no, Birkat HaMazon is not a Birkat. Hallel ends with a bracha. Yeah, it's true. Hallel ends with a bracha. The bracha at the end of Hallel and the bracha at the end of Magid.
Well, what is that? It ends with a bracha.
Psukei de Zimra. Well, Hallel and Psukei de Zimra are very clearly, let's call them first cousins. They're structured in similar ways. All these brachot of magid, of kriya, of the recitation of some text, of formalized text. So they had this idea of a bracha lefaneh and a bracha achareh. But the bracha at the end of Megillah is not a Birkat HaMitzvah. What kind of bracha is it?
Shavach.
Shavach v'hodah. That apparently is a minhag. And there were places that had a minhag to say that bracha, and there were places that didn't have minhag. Even though, has anybody seen, ever been someplace where they didn't say it? No. B'shein. Now the Mishnah goes on to something
changes
else.
Changes subject completely.
Right? And from here on, the Mishnah changes subject and becomes, instead of Masechet Megillah, it becomes Masechet
Kriyat
Torah. There is, interestingly, there is no Masechet Kriyat Torah. You think about it. Megillah, which is Mitzvah Derabbanan, which you do one day a year, has a whole Masechet. Kriyat Torah that we do minimally four times a week, which is a kind of centerpiece of the Jewish life. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did not organize.
That's a fact.
Well, that's efficiency.
Yes, no, there's all types of.
I think it's interesting. No, but it's efficiency. Because you would say, okay, the mitzvot pertaining to Kriyat Torah, 90% of them will line up with Kriyat Megillah. So I'd rather put something like Kriyat Megillah in a Masechta because it's special. And it's going to moshech you and do something Kriyat Torah.
Yeah.
And then have you go look for the one or two things that you have to do for Megillah.
But we could have organized the Mishnah as Masechet Sefer Torah.
But there is a Masechet.
But then you'd have to go look for those.
No,
one
there's
or two
a, one of the Masechetot Katanot.
Which is true. That falls in the same category as there's a Tefillin there also.
Yeah, no, you could imagine a parallel universe in which the Shas is organized. But there's a Masechet called Masechet Sfarim, Masechet Sefer Torah, Masechet whatever. And agav to that, you discuss Megillah. Right? Hanukkah does not have a Masechet. It has very little material.
A little bit
it's agav to Hadlakat Neor Shabbat.
That's only in the Gemara, not even the Mishnah.
It's not even in the Mishnah.
It's the Mishnah.
Right. I'm just saying, you can imagine a parallel universe. It happens at the bulk of the. I mean, there's all types of other things in the Masechta that have nothing to do neither with this nor with that. But anyway, it's interesting. But now now since we're talking about Kriyas HaMegillah, we're talking about the dinim of Kriyas HaMegillah. It's like it's what do you say? Afuch al afuch, right? The dinim of how the Megillah is read are based to a significant degree on how the Torah is read. So since we're talking about the Megillah, let's also now talk about its antecedent, which is Kriyat Torah. Makom shenag levarich v'shloivarich b'sheni v'chamishi b'shabbat b'mincha b'sheni uv'chamishi b'shabbat uv'mincha korin shlosha. You have three aliyahs on Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos mincha. Ein pochatin mehen ve'ein mosifin. Right? No more, no less. You can't add aliyahs, and you certainly can't subtract. What does it mean, mosifin? So we know on Shabbos you have something called hosafa. Yet we have on Shabbos we have 7.5 aliyahs. You have 7 aliyahs plus maftir. So acharon is a hosafa, right? That you take shvi'i and you divide into half, and you give it out to an eighth person, right? And in theory, you can add even more. There's some minhag. I used to daven a shul in Yerushalayim, the Shulan Rechov Ya'el, always has a hosafa. Every Shabbos, they always have, for some historical reason for why they did this, they always have a hosafa, and they have they always add an eighth aliyah in addition to maftir, even on a regular Shabbos, even when it's not a bar mitzvah or an ufrufer or whatever it is. But we're all aware that this can happen. In most shuls, like here, we never do it unless there's a bar mitzvah, there's some odd special occasion, you have two kohanim that need aliyah, something unusual. But during the week, in a Shabbos mincha, you cannot add. Three is the top, and it is the bottom. Ve'ein maftirin b'navi. And there's no haftarah during the week or on Shabbos mincha. Hapoteach ve'achotem b'Torah mivarech lefaneha ve'achareha. And you have brachot. Who says the brachot?
Well, the Koreh.
No? Well, in other words, once upon a time, you didn't have a Baal Kore. You got an Aliyah. The Aliyah meant that you read in the Torah. But forget about that for a second. You'd get an Aliyah. Rishon, who's usually a Kohen, he would say the opening bracha. And whoever got the last bracha, whoever got the last Aliyah, he would say the closing bracha. And if you, you're a Levi, aren't you?
Kohen.
You're a Kohen. Who's a Levi? Oh, you're a Levi. You would never say a bracha when you got an Aliyah. Because there's always something that's going to come before you, and there's always something that's going to come after you. So they'd say an Aliyah, they'd say Yamo, David, Ben, what are your father's name? What?
Yisrael. Your Gavai knows about Arab right now.
Yamo, David, Ben, Yisrael, Alevi. Formerly a Kohen.
Interesting.
David, Ben, Yisrael, Alevi. You would get up. You would read the Aliyah. Presumably, they'd call you up, and you would read the Aliyah for everybody. But even in the days when there was a Baal Kore, you would get up, you'd stand there. The Baal Kore would read. You'd shake hands. You'd sit down. Right? It takes away a lot of the drama, the whole thing.
That's why you have the Mishabarach, and that's why you have the
Yeah, probably Kiddush. It probably cut down on the Nedavot. Mm-hmm. But only the Rishon would say the first bracha and
would you interrupt in between?
What?
With the ratio of Hefsek in between the brachot?
Maybe you should be careful not to, because the guy in the beginning would be Motzi everybody, and the guy at the end would be Motzi everybody. The Gemara will discuss how we moved over to our minhag, that for each Aliyah everybody you have the opening and closing and opening and closing and opening and closing. What do you imagine the reason was?
Leave the minhag or to initially have the minhag?
No, and it's to change the minhag to the way we have.
If there's a problem of hefsek, then probably people would not be able to keep that.
Either because of a problem of hefsek, or because people would be yotzei v'nichnas, somebody would come late, they would miss it.
And wouldn't hear the first bracha.
Yeah, right. So we'll get to it in the Gemara. So again, Sheni, Chamishi, and Mincha and Shabbos, the guy at the beginning and the guy at the end said the brachot. Karin arba'a. Ain pochatin mehen, ve'ain mosifim aleihem, ve'ain maftirim benavi, apoteach v'chotem, b'torah mivarech lefaneh v'la'acharecha. Nikuda. The same halachot, except for Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed are the same as Sheni v'Chamishi and Shabbos Mincha.
Except
you have four leis instead of three leis. Zeh haklal. Kol sheyesh bo musaf ve'eino yom tov, korin arba'a. In other words, Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh, it's not stam a weekday, even though there's no Issur Melacha. I mean, Chol HaMoed, there is an idea of Issur Melacha, but it's Chol HaMoed. What's Chol HaMoed?
It's the Yom Tov minus?
Right, so is Chol HaMoed a weekday plus, or is it Yontif minus? So really, Chol HaMoed is Yontif minus. But in principle, you're allowed to do the Melachot that you need to do. We're not always so beseder with Chol HaMoed. A Chol HaMoed is like Yontif. You should wear Yontif clothing. You should. We're not always so careful.
We honor it. I don't know, like if you compare it to, let's say, in America, where you would work, I mean, you know.
Yes, it's true.
And then, like, even if they would wear a white shirt, here we really, I think we honor the spirit of the day, maybe.
Yes,
more than
but not always. You know, I always get, happens that I don't have it now, but you know, I always go around with a pen. I'm like one of those last people that still carries a pen, and it's usually a fountain pen. But I don't carry a Chol HaMoed. Even a Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to write when you need to write.
That's the old joke about America's yeshiva, right? How he gets ready, how he gets dressed for Shabbat.
Takes the pen out of his pocket.
Yeah.
So, B'yom Tov, Chamisha. On Yontif, you have five aliyahs in addition to Maftir. B'yom HaKippurim, Shisha. B'Shabbat, Shiva. Ein pochatin mehen, aval mosifin aleihen. What is the antecedent of Aleihen?
And the Shiva.
The Shiva of Shabbat.
What's another way to read the Mishnah?
The six of Yom Kippur also.
Or the five,
or
of, Yom.
Five of Yontif.
In other words, the way the Mishnah, the way this part of the Mishnah is divided is Sheni Chamishi Shabbos Mincha is three. Then you have Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed is four. Then you have Yontif, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos.
That's 5, 6, and 7.
5, 6, and 7.
Ein pochatin,
aval mosifin. So ein pochatin, אבל מוסיפין on any of these days? Or just on Shabbos? Is it just on the Sefer? Or is it on all three? Or is it on all three? So look here at Tosfos. Hapotech v'achotein b'torah mevarech lefaneh v'achareh. Kashya, amai tanahoch. On which of these three items is this halacha referring that you can add? Is it just on Shabbos, or is it on also Yom Kippur and Yontif that you can add? As kasha amai tana hoch milta hocha shlosha pa'amim daha bechad zimna sagya. Why does it say this din of ein pochatin of al mosifin? Why does it say three times? In other words, why not just say the din about? In other words, during the week it's three, and chol hamoed Rosh Chodesh is four, Yontif is five, Yom Kippur is six, Shabbos is seven. Ein pochatin, the numbers are all the minimum. Vein mosifin, except for fill in the blank. But why does it say sheni chamishi ve Shabbos mincha ein pochatin vein mosifin? Chol hamoed Rosh Chodesh ein pochatin vein mosifin. Yontif, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos ein pochatin aval mosifin.
So the Chora would be because Yom Kippur and Shabbat are the same.
Ah, so it's to include all three. Right. So it's to include all three, you want to say.
We couldn't have done, but during the week, you don't have enough skimps to add more.
Ah, so that's like a technical problem. That's a technical problem of...
Okay,
still a problem. On during the week. Well, not always. Sometimes during the week you can. The minimum aliyah is three.
Right.
Is three. So it depends on the kriya of that particular time. Depends on the kriya of that particular time. But in theory...
If you had to, you could repeat.
Yeah, you can go back. You can...
Also, not saying here that anything about the actual psukim itself. I imagine that wasn't determined this early. I imagine probably a lot more...
Right, so in other words, how the aliyahs were broken up, you know, or... I mean, you see, even there's some aliyahs now... And generally speaking, on Sheni Chamishi and Shabbos, you take whatever Rishon of the coming week is and you divide into three. But sometimes if Rishon is too short, so then for Sheni Chamishi, you make it longer. So there are other minhagim about it. You see, even sometimes in the Siddur it says, you know, sometimes you end here.
My son's Bruce Marshall was Masay. And there was a question because he was going to be reading on Thursday, I guess, his birthday. So some people have to be like very far into the...
Because you want to get up to the end. You don't want to end in the middle. Generally, you have this idea that you want to end in the middle of an inyan, right? So you keep going until you get to the end. And there's other time, like on Zos Chanukah, the kriya is very long, because you want to get up to the end of up to Zot Chanukat Hamizbeach. Right, so the Tosfos says that the reason that it's repeated three times is because we might have thought that if you do add a bracha, or you do add, oh geez, we really don't do anything. You do add an aliyah, so maybe this idea of mivarech lefaneha u'mivarech la'achote mivarech achareha, that's only for the minimal. But if you were to add an aliyah, so the added aliyah would need a separate bracha. Right? Kamash malon, that's not the case. Kamash malon is not the case. Now this idea of the osafot, so some say that you can only make a osaf on Shabbos, and some say that you can also do it on Yontif and on Yom Kippur, in theory. The Gemara will explain that the reason we don't... Why don't we make Hosafot on the other days?
So
Tircha de Tzibura. It doesn't seem like such a big Tircha, but yeah, Tircha de Tzibura. So maybe Tircha de Tzibura applies on all the days except for on Shabbos. On Yontif, you have this idea of Chatzi Lochem v'Chatzi Lashem. And there's some people that take this very literally and divide up the Yontif day, the schedule, so that you really spend, you know, 12 hours in Avodas Haruchnius and 12 hours in Avodas Hagashmius. And they like work it out very precisely.
Yom Kippur, but you should be able to add.
No. Yom Kippur is a Tircha de Tzibura because it makes the davening longer and people are fasting and it's, you don't want to make the davening longer. And davening Yom Kippur is 7.5 hours. And if you made it 7 hours and 32 minutes, that would be a Tircha de Tzibura. Okay. Seems that there are a lot of other things that Tircha de Tzibura worse than that, but that's what the Gemara seems to be saying. So maybe really it is only Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah has an idea that really you could even, in principle, if there was some compelling reason that overrode Tircha de Tzibura, you could even have a Hosafa during the week. There's an idea that a Chosen on the day of his wedding, or on the Kriyas HaTorah before his wedding, should get, in addition to this idea of the Ufruf. In Ashkenazim, we had the Ufruf on the Shabbos before. By the Sephardim, they have Shabbat Hatan and the Shabbat after. They should get an Aliyah. But even, let's say, you're getting married on a Monday, you should get an Aliyah that day. You're getting married on a Tuesday, you should get an Aliyah the day before Monday. So let's say you have a bunch of Chasanim all on the same day. So maybe that would be a reason to override the Tircha de Tzibura and to give them all Aliyahs. That's not, we don't do that, but the Mishnah Berurah suggests that it's a possibility. Seder. So I guess we learned the Mishnah. Okay. It's a bad way to end the season, but we will meet again on Rosh Chodesh.
Learning a Mishnah is a wonderful
thing. Yes, but we should have done more in an hour. Okay, everybody should have if Rachmanis, we still have the Tisha B'Av. If there's no Tisha B'Av, we'll have Shir next week.
If there's no Tisha B'Av.